Hey everyone, it's Lisa Anderson. Welcome to The Boundless Show this week. I want you to know that this week's show is sponsored actually by a book that is brand new by Laura Taggart. It's called Making Love Last. For those of you who are interested in getting married or perhaps are even engaged, 20% of marriages end within 5 years. But don't be discouraged. You can actually learn how to divorce-proof your marriage before heading into it. Check out this book for some great ideas. And again, it's Making Love Last by Laura Taggart and is available wherever books are sold. Also, we want to give a shout out again for our 500th episode and want your impact stories. Some of you have sent them in, and that's great. Those of you that have yet to send them in, if you could think of an actual specific instance on the show that is memorable to you, especially if it's something you learned or something that just encouraged you, that would be super great. Send them in to editor@boundless.org and it may end up on our show. Later on, we are going to answer a question from someone who is losing attraction for her fiancé. And so they've been engaged for a while, and she's kind of wondering, is this a bad sign? So we're going to go ahead and weigh in on that one. And then for our culture segment, we have part two of our interview with John Stonestreet and Brett Kunkel on the culture. And so, of course, you know, there's so much to be said there, but it was so good that we broke it into two parts. So you need to get the second part here this time around. Well, here we are for our roundtable. I get to welcome Luke, Benjamin, and Marissa. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Great to have you. These three are part of our intern pool this summer here at Boundless. If you are in college and you're looking for an internship, please hit us up here at Focus on the Family. If you go to focusonthefamily.com, you will see the link for volunteers and interns. It's a summer program, super fun. Sometimes they work, but usually they're just out like hiking and camping. Just I think we can all be honest about that. So, yeah. But we're making them do something right here. So we are going to talk about dating moving towards marriage. So this is going to be a fun topic. It's not one, I mean, we talk about this a lot at Boundless, but I'll be interested to get your perspective being on the younger end of the young adult spectrum. So this is like, you know, I could talk to 28-year-olds and they're like, yeah, let me tell you what I think about it. But there might be some different perspectives for y'all. So this whole concept of, you know, I've read a lot of articles and Boundless is a pretty big proponent of, you know, date with purpose. So date with the idea of marriage in mind. Otherwise, you're going to be going out for 8 or 9 years and just having pizza with people. And that can get very expensive. And it's kind of a time waster eventually. So, but what does it actually mean? Because we don't want to be all crazy either and be like, hey, on the first date, you better ask them if they would ever, you know, potentially marry you. Which, incidentally, my brother-in-law did. He used to do that. He was a classic engineer, kind of, and by kind of, I mean a lot, socially awkward. And he would just take dates out and be like, look, do you see this really even going anywhere? Like, am I someone you could marry? Because if not, I don't want to waste any more money on you. And it rarely worked for him, but somehow my sister married him. So we will just let that lie. All that to say, infusing the dating process with purpose without like kind of getting crazy. So I want to talk to y'all. You're in college. How much does the marriage conversation come up in your circles, whether around dating or not? I mean, are your peers, are you guys thinking like, oh, yeah, this is something that I need to be mindful of by the time I'm out of school? Or are you kind of in the camp of like, no, as long as something happens in my 30s, I'm all good? Or are you somewhere in between?
I know for me personally, it really just depends on which people you're around. If I were around some of my school or classmates or coworkers, you know, it's not a Christian school or a Christian workplace. So obviously that's not... just based on a lot of the worldviews we have now in our society, that isn't a discussion that usually comes up. It's more of we might date and eventually move in together or things along that line.
Right.
On the other hand...
And it's almost like that's the assumption.
Like, oh, yeah. It's just like if you even consider marriage or within a shorter amount of time and you're not engaged for 5 years, a long time, it's like unheard of. And people are like, wait, what?
Right.
But on the other hand... in other Christian groups too, just really depending on which one you are in, you do, I find myself having those conversations a lot with some of my closest friends, because we are trying to pursue God in all aspects of our lives, but especially when it comes to our future married lives. And so, yeah, those discussions will come up. And
okay. Now, what would you, when you say they come up, like, what are you guys generally talking about when they come up? Or does someone just say, all right, let's start talking about our future marriages?
Yeah. Well, I know for me personally, and like the one particular group of friends that I'm in, I talk a lot about my boyfriend. We're looking to be engaged by the end of the year and married next year. So I do talk about that in my experience, because I know none of them have had that dating relationship yet, but they're moving towards that and they're trying to date with intention and marriage in mind. And so with that, we talk about just like different struggles we've had with that, and not when we've all been single and just not sure how to engage in that or the best way, or like, am I like waiting too long for this? Or like, how do I know when God's leading me this direction? So mm-hmm. just all types of discussions about that.
Okay. How about you guys?
Well, yeah, my college, it's definitely all over the place talking about marriage and getting engaged and things like that. It's a college that is right next to several lakes. And so if ever any of the guys get engaged, the tradition thing is for them to be kidnapped by their friends and thrown into the lake. And so you always hear if anyone has just gotten engaged. And then just the general topic, it's a small Christian college. And so just the general topic of marriage and moving ahead into marriage comes up fairly regularly. Talked about it with several of my friends, just as far as what kind of things are we looking for, or just kind of what our expectations are on dating or things like that.
Now, would you say, is it something they're assuming most people at your school should happen sooner rather than later? Or are you getting more than, no, you've got all the time in the world?
There's a good mix. Okay. There's definitely a large pool of people sooner that say you should do it mm-hmm. sooner. There's a kind of stupid little tradition thing or saying ring by spring mm-hmm. of you really ought to get them a ring by spring. Otherwise, maybe it's not going anywhere.
Well, that's because they want to get thrown in the lake.
Well, so yeah, that too. Make it
otherwise, it's all bets are off. So, yeah. Okay. How about you, Benjamin?
I go to a Christian school. So talking about marriage and basically the school community pushing marriage is a part of just the makeup. You may not necessarily be saying, hey, you should be married by the time you get out of college, like aloud, but just because of how the culture treats dating and how they treat proposing and engagement, mm-hmm. it feels very much like the student body is encouraging each other to get engaged.
Okay.
Which is, I think, kind of especially true at Christian schools. Mm-hmm. But I've had experiences that I've been talking to one of my friends, and somebody's come and asked one of my other friends, hey, is she dating Benjamin? Are they together? And my friend will be like, no, they're not. and I'm engaged. I'm very recently engaged. And I don't think that's necessarily a direct product of being pushed mm-hmm. to be engaged. Mm-hmm. But it's just something that kind of turned out the way it did.
Okay. So let's think about actual, like, the process of dating. Like, do you think, what's the chatter around, because I think most Christians would say, yeah, you should be intentional in the way you date. You shouldn't just be out, like, breaking people's hearts and being all crazy and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to say that. But how do you be intentional about dating without, like, taking it too seriously so that everyone's either totally paralyzed and unwilling to date because they think the minute they go for coffee, they're supposed to be marrying someone, or, you know, she's going to be picking out china or getting all crazy and stuff. but how do you still have fun in the dating process but not be haphazard about it?
Well, I think that a really good thing is to just focus on spending time not exclusively with each other. Like, mm-hmm. I've been in one dating relationship previously, and just looking back at things that we did well, things that we did wrong, we did not include our friend groups nearly as much as we should have. And that would have so much helped just the relationship in general. Because, sure, you can have fun doing lots of things, just you two, and definitely should to just build that relationship. But if you're not spending large amounts of times with each of your friend groups as well and just having fun and parties or things like that, then it's going to be really hard to move deeper in the relationship.
But at the same time, obviously you need that alone time.
No, oh, definitely. Can't,
can always just be going on, like, going to parties with each other. And although it's important to kind of be in community as you're dating, to not just cut yourself off, it really is about you, the guy, the girl, and God.
Yeah. I mean, and for me, I totally believe, you know, like you were saying, dating with intention and eventually wanting to move toward marriage. And so I think, like, going into that relationship, like, realizing that, you know, potentially this will be the end goal and possibly the destination you arrive at. And so with that, going into the relationship with that in mind. So, I mean, obviously, you know, like you were saying, Luke, like making sure you're still spending time with friends and doing things to build yourself and encourage yourself to grow. But also realizing, too, that if marriage is your end goal, that person is going to ultimately be your number one priority still. I think you have to have that mindset before going into dating, because I don't think you can go into dating just looking for a good time and then eventually try to transition into that mindset. I think you're going to come into a lot of different problems, whether it's on your part or the other person's part. I think it's you both have to understand and have the maturity to realize that, like I said, this is marriage is your goal. You know?
That's good. I mean, and I think it's interesting because I think a lot of people make, you know, the mistake of one of the two extremes of, like, either, oh, no, we're going to get married and our lives are just going to stay the same and we'll all still hang out with our friends and it'll be like college always was or whatever. And then the opposite extreme is, no, we're just going to spend the rest of our lives gazing into each other's eyes. And all I need is, you know, we're a team together. We don't need other people. And so, you know, it's healthily finding a balance between those two and figuring that out.
Yeah, neither of those are realistic. I think you romanticize the whole hand-holding 24/7. We only need each other the rest of our lives. And then but you also see in our culture now people who are like, okay, they'll still be there. I'm going to go hang out and do this every single day with my buddies, or you know, they're not my top priority. And so, like I was saying about Benjamin's comment, you still do things with your friends, but you maintain your number one priority is still with that person and eventually, you know, your fiance or your spouse, you know, because they're the person you're going to be spending the rest of your life with. And so that's why you do need that healthy balance.
Oh, definitely. And absolutely. And what you said earlier about including God in that whole process, so foundational for us as Christians dating. It's like, it's so easy to get into a relationship with someone and just focus on the fun things about them or just your time together or whatever emotional, romantic feelings you're having, and just focus on those things and become close then. And then, like, 2 or 3 years into the dating relationship, realize, wait a minute, we have incredibly different theological views on things. And it can be so hard to then reconcile those so late in the relationship if you're not including them already.
And one of the values of having community in that sense is, a lot of times I always say this on the Boundless Show, if you're really into someone, you're just going to start getting crazy, like, pretty early on. And all of a sudden, you're just completely blind. You're not seeing red flags. You're not, and you need objective people to speak into that who can be like, no, listen up, because something's not not right here. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit, too, about, and maybe Benjamin and Marissa, you can kick this off, because Benjamin, you said you're recently engaged. Marissa, you're hoping, you're serious, so hoping for this to happen. Please listen up, potential fiance. anyway, but what would you say, how did you, because most people, I mean, certainly, like you alluded to, Marissa, people in your secular workplace and school are going to be like, you are too young. That is totally crazy. You don't even know what you're doing, whatever. How did you guys come to the point where you realized, no, I'm ready for marriage. I'm going to transition, make that switch from, okay, I'm dating, but I've actually found this person. I'm now ready to commit. the rest of my life to a person. How do you know when that time is here?
Well, first of all, I think that ultimately comes down to your relationship with God and how you're pursuing that. You can't have a healthy relationship with someone if your relationship with God isn't okay. And this doesn't matter what relationship it is. It doesn't matter if it's romantic, with family, friends, anything. So you need to make sure your relationship with God is right first. And if you are pursuing that relationship with God, that person will come into your life eventually that is also pursuing God, and that's their number one priority. And as you pursue God together, that will just naturally draw you closer. Mm-hmm. And so through that, I think that God will like make it clear in his timing, his plans for you. And I think everyone is very different and unique, and everyone has a unique story. I know couples who met and a few days later they were engaged, and they're some of the happiest, most godly married couples I know, and other couples who were dating and engaged for years, and you know, that worked out for them as well. So I really think that if you're truly pursuing God, he will make it clear. But I think you also need to have those conversations with that other person too, and see where they're standing with it. Mm-hmm. However, I think if God really is the center of it, it will naturally work itself out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. Like you say, it's very different for each person. For me personally, I knew very soon into the relationship that is going to work out this way. Because we went to church with each other like early on, and we prayed together, and we had these conversations about God and about our faith together. And really, I think it's really important for Christians to focus on walking together with God as they're dating, especially as they're becoming more serious about dating. And really that just means being intentional about getting the word together, having devos. And it's something that you really need to be conscious about in order for you to keep God the center of the relationship.
Absolutely. Like, obviously, I'm not engaged, haven't been engaged, but thinking back to stories that my parents have told me, they met when they were in grad school. And then 6 months after they met, they got engaged. And I think 6 months or less after that, they got married. So you can definitely move fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also comes down to, as far as making the decision for yourself, how much self-control do you have? Mm-hmm. Going back to what you said, Marissa, about your walk with God having to be first, like, absolutely, but we're still flawed human beings. And so there's many times in which you have to make the decision to move a little faster towards marriage if you're both struggling with these emotions in big ways.
You're good. I completely agree. I think that growing up in a Christian household and having like all these different dating books growing up and all these different people talking to me and saying, you know, you should have this timeline and this plan. And I was always told, so my whole life I was going through this plan in my head. I'm like, okay, I'm going to date for at least a year if it's someone, you know, that I'm possibly going to marry and then, you know, be engaged for a year. And obviously, that's not what happened to me at all. I was like, I'm convinced this is what's happening. No, like for us, it's like it was beginning of the year. We're going to be engaged in hope within a couple months and then, you know, married next year. It's just just taking those factors into consideration. Like, obviously, you know, you want to be prepared. You can't just completely jump into, you know, marriage. But at the same time, being considerate of those factors as well, and trying to see what God's plan is for you. And if God's saying, hey, you guys should get married now, not like 5 years from now, then.
Do you see a lot of people in your sphere dating and then breaking up, dating, breaking up, kind of mirroring what we see going on in the world on different levels? I mean, there it's like hooking up, breaking up, whatever. But what do you think, what would you say they're doing wrong? What do they need to be doing differently?
I there's nothing wrong with dating, first of all, and then like getting back into a relationship. I think the trap is if you're finding your identity in that, and that's where you're finding your self-esteem and your confidence and all these other factors. And if you're using it as a way to feel secure with yourself because you don't want to be alone, or because it makes you feel better, or there's so many different factors, I think that's the dangerous issue, both in Christian relationships and also secular relationships.
Definitely. And we live in such a consumer culture. I think sometimes that people look at a dating relationship like a consumer, like it's a piece of entertainment for them mm-hmm. to just take in. And then it becomes very individualistic. Like, you're not as much worrying about how much you're building a relationship, how much you're supporting the other person, as you are what can I get out of this? How can I have fun with this? And I think that's just a product of our culture, and it's very dangerous and prevalent even on Christian universities.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge supporter of friendships. Like, friendships are phenomenal. You can dig so deep with people and build fantastic relationships that way. I think too many people view dating as kind of, I'll get to know you a little bit. I know some people who've met with, like, blind dates and stuff where that is truly the first time and your only interaction of getting to know the person. But for the vast majority of people, I would say, try building just regular friendships first. If you think, I might like to date them, how about being a friend for a couple months and see if you can actually get along together first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Good thoughts, you guys. I mean, it's interesting to get your perspectives on this, and hopefully all of you out there can weigh in with yours as well. And just as we navigate this space and figure out what that looks like, trusting God in the process. So thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Struck down, persecuted, under pressure, man, that's how we do it. We at war, we at war. But have you even looked at the scoreboard? Scoreboard, scoreboard. W's all day, what you scared for? Scared for, scared for. Ain't nothing coming at us that we ain't prepared for.
Well, hey, y'all. For this week's culture segment, we are back with John Stonestreet and Brett Kunkel for part two of the conversation that we started last week regarding their book, A Practical Guide to Culture. And I told you last week that we would be talking about some hot button issues and a little bit more that they have explored as far as what it means for us as Christians to discuss these things. And so listen in as we pick up the conversation and see what you think. One of the things that you guys do that I think is so helpful in the book is address head on. You know, I think a lot of people will say, oh, okay, well, you're going to talk about entertainment, whatever. You're going to talk about the culture or maybe the public square in terms of higher education and what's going on there. But you guys actually delve into a few things in the book that I think many of us dread sitting around the table and discussing, especially if we're in a secular workplace and or we have friends, coworkers who are in this space. You address issues of pornography, casual sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Why did you pick, first of all, and there were a couple other areas you tread into, I want to take those in the second group, but why did you feel these four areas that, can kind of be grouped together but also taken separately, why did they specifically have to be addressed in the context of a work like this?
Well, this kind of goes to the analogy that we use throughout the entire book. In fact, so I'm from California, Southern California. I've been surfing all my life. And as I got married and started having kids, I always had this dream of taking my kids and helping them to surf, right? And so how did I do that, though? How did I get my kids, when they're 2 and 3, how did I start training them to surf? Did I put them on a surfboard, push them out in the water and say, hey, go for it. You know, good luck. I hope you you make it out with me. No, there's a whole process of kind of training and protection to help them begin to learn about the waves and the currents and the ocean. And one of the key things is learning the different aspects of the ocean. So, for instance, there's not just the waves, the things that you're going to see that, you know, can smack you in the head and pound you and that kind of thing. But there's also the currents, what's going on kind of underneath the water. And you have to be careful. When you see a discolored water over here, that tells you there's a rip current that's going to suck you out. And that's just as dangerous as a wave can be. And in the same way, that's how we kind of talk about the culture. And so we talk about the currents, the different, in part two, the different ideas that are kind of underneath the surface a little bit, and that influence us in ways we don't even realize and that socialize us. But then the section that we're talking about now are the waves. These are the things you really see that are pounding. And so when John and I kind of looked into culture, we actually outlined probably double the amount that we were able to include in the book because there's just so many. But when we look in culture, this is the conversation the culture's having. I mean, these are the waves. And that's why we wanted to address them, because these are the things that people are talking about, that the institutions of culture are diving into. This is the conversations that are happening on a college campus, you know, porn, casual sex, the gender identity stuff, homosexuality. I mean, this is coming out of the college campus all the time. So that's the conversation the culture's having, and so we felt like we need to be in that conversation. We need to address those. We need to help people see how the Christian story actually makes sense of those. And what's the contrast? And so we talk about the lies that are told, because when it comes to the stories about something like pornography or casual sex, the culture's telling a story, and we want to say, hey, wait, that actually the story is a false story. These things are harmless. Oh, casual sex, that's harmless. Viewing pornography in the privacy of your home, oh, that's harmless. Well, it actually is harmful in many ways, and we talk about the different ways that it's harmful, and then reframe that issue in light of the biblical story. Okay, how do we make sense of something like, you know, sexuality from the biblical story? So I think those are the conversations the culture's having, and we as Christians, if biblical truth is relevant across the cultures, then Scripture has something to say to those things in our cultural moment.
Well, I think that's a good point, Brett. And one thing I want to piggyback off of on that is, again, you know, you talked about gender identity, sexual orientation. There's a lot of it that we're seeing come up in legislation, obviously legalization of same-sex marriage. We're all, you know, for those in our audience who are working in workplaces where maybe they are being asked to become part of workplace sponsored, you know, things for LGBT issues, or they just have coworkers that they think are fabulous and they want to love them well. What does that look like to inform or to bring their faith to play in a way that isn't just surfacey things like, oh, well, maybe I better change my Facebook profile pic to a Celebrate Pride one, or maybe I, how do they, I think there's so much fear around, am I going to get hit? You know, is this going to come back to haunt me for having said the wrong thing? Or do I have to tread this space lightly? What does that look like for them to do that well in a biblical context?
Well, I think that's a really important question, because honestly, for most of American history, Christians haven't had to run afoul of the culture in that way. Now, through most of Christian history, Christians have. Mm-hmm. Well, our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world, you know, they're not choosing between their convictions and their pension. They're choosing between their convictions and their life, their families, their homeland, and so on. But really, it is more normal for Christians to run afoul of the larger culture in which they're in with convictions. And we've reached that point. We know, for example, that people who hold views counter to the new sexual orthodoxy and all those issues you were just talking about, it's no longer considered like quaint or prudish. It's now considered wrong, maybe even evil, intolerant, and hateful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to live in a culture in which Christian beliefs are kind of like, oh, well, that's cute for you, but not for me. It's another thing to live in a culture in which to have those beliefs, you know, makes you kind of a public enemy. And part of that is if you're not solid in your convictions, you're not going to make the right choice on that. If you're not clear of the difference between the story and the moment, if you're not planted and grounded deeply in the story, you're not going to make the right, commitments. One of the reasons we wrote this book, and we deal with it pretty dramatically in chapter 3, which is about what does success in culture look like, is you have to make that decision. You know, what's most important? What am I going to be able to do? I think especially on all those issues, what we're told, getting maybe a little bit more practical, is that you can't hold truth and love together, right? If you're going to be truthful about sexuality, you're not going to be loving. If you're going to be loving, you're not going to be truthful. I speak to audiences a lot, and I ask that question. How many of you guys feel like truth and love are in conflict? And everybody raises their hands, not just in the workplace, but around the Thanksgiving table, you know, with friends, maybe even at church. I feel that sometimes. But again, that's why it's important to remember that the story places truth and love in the person of Jesus Christ. The truth and love aren't in conflict. They are perfectly held together in the way that in who Jesus is, how he lived, how he loved sinners. And so we've got to be solid on that.
Yeah. One thing that you guys do really well, and Brett, maybe you can speak to this, because again, this book, folks, is not about like, let's just point out all the bad things in our culture and just be angry about them. But you walk through specifically finishing out the book by saying there is a lot of good that we can celebrate. There are things that we can promote. There are gaps that Christians can step into and actually be an answer or point to the answers. Can you talk us through, Brett, just a couple of those things, like just some easy ways that we can get encouragement for where we are, not be despairing that we're not in our grandparents' generation that just, quote, seems so easy. But how can we actually restore some of the brokenness that we're seeing out there?
Yeah, well, I think we see that the brokenness is opportunity for the gospel. Mm-hmm. And along these lines, this is why it's so important to be shaped by God's story, not the cultural story, right? And so, and this is where I think it's really important for us to have expectations that are shaped by the gospel and God's story. In John 15, Jesus says, hey, love one another. And then right after that, he says, and if the world hates you, know that it hated me first. And he talks about that a healthy expectation that the world's going to hate us. And as John said, I think the days of socially acceptable Christianity are over by in part. But instead of despairing over that, we need to see this as opportunities for the gospel. The brokenness of the culture around us is an opportunity for the gospel. Again, Paul says in Galatians, right? Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that is what he will reap. And so we're going to see this on an issue like sexual orientation. The culture says, let's condone it, go for it. We're seeing, just a free-for-all on all sexuality. But then in particular, you got homosexuality. I've got, you know, a same-sex couple that live next door to me. Young boys that I coach for a soccer team, his mom, just married her long-term girlfriend. I mean, this is all around us. But this is not the place to despair. This is the opportunity to, number one, understand that when you live your life, when the culture decides to live its life outside of God's design, it's going to break down, right? We are designed by God. And in that design, there's a certain way we're to function. And if you don't function properly, you will break down. Just like any appliance at home, my washing machine. If I take my washing machine and I use it in a way that it wasn't designed to function, it'll eventually break down. So if I throw my tools in there and say, I'm going to wash my tools in my washing machine, it will break down.
He knows that from experience, by the way.
Yeah, I got to start reading the manuals. But in the same way with human beings, God, in a sense, has scripture is obviously more than a manual, but it lays out the path for human flourishing. And we've got to be confident in that. We got to know that. And we got to know that story so that when we see the world around us saying something completely different, casual sex or homosexuality or whatever it is, we can be confident that that's a false story and the result is going to be brokenness. And so for us then, that's opportunity. Mm-hmm. Opportunity to share the gospel, to let it speak into those situations, and to bring hope and healing and restoration. Unfortunately, there will be the brokenness, but that's an opportunity.
The other thing too is, again, remembering what culture is. It's what humans make of the world. And Christians are called to make things of the world as well. There's an ancient Christian idea that we wrestle with in the scripture, and it got kind of new life in the Reformation, which was calling. That the Christian life is not just the moral stance we take about bad things in the culture. It's not just when we share our faith or go to church or take communion or something like that. That all of life is an act of worship because humanity was created by God to bear his image. And what that means is the artist has an incredible role to play to champion the good and fight the evil and restore the brokenness. And so does the politician and the business leader and the young entrepreneur and the young mom and the young dad and the head of the neighborhood watch and the plumber and the baker and the hairstylist and so on. Recapturing that idea of calling is one of the most elusive things in a culture that separates the spiritual and the secular so deeply. but one of the most powerful ways that young adults in particular can embrace their calling to make a difference in the world.
Yeah.
Our job is faithfulness, and God's job is the results. Because I think it's important to say, because we're going to see, I've seen Christians, I tried to live faithfully and do what's right and to love people well. And it can be discouraging sometimes with the results. So, for instance, that mom who married her long-term girlfriend, I coached her son in soccer for years. I got to see, actually, their family go through a divorce. She divorced her first husband. He was addicted to porn. It was a horrible situation, a lot of brokenness. But my wife and I, we loved that family well through that time. And they knew we were committed to them. They constantly were signing up their son for me to be their son's coach because I think of the relationship. But then when she got into the same-sex marriage and then she found out what my views were on that, she really came after me. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she then kind of threw out all of the cliches. Well, you hate gay people. And I said, no, I said, look at our past history. Like, I mean, can you say the way I've treated you and your ex-husband and your sons that you felt like I've hated you? No, you would say, hey, we've really loved you. But all of that didn't matter because of what views I had about her marriage. And I said, hey, let's sit down face to face and let's talk about this. I'd love to take you out to lunch and talk and share with you. And she didn't even have anything to do with that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the prices to pay. But my focus there wasn't discouraged because I didn't get a good result. I didn't convince her or she wanted to break off relationship. I realized, well, my job first and foremost is to be faithful to God in this world and leave the results to Him. Mm-hmm. And that helps you to fight some of the discouragement, because there will be a price to pay for some people in different situations.
Yeah. Well, and that's why leaning into the gospel and understanding and being in the Word of God, I think, is so important, because we, as Christians, it's so easy for us to get tripped up by our own idolatries that, I mean, forget the world. We've got our own stuff going on. And
John has a ton of stuff, man.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. For sure. So, okay, folks, the book is A Practical Guide to Culture, Helping the Next Generation Navigate Today's World. There's going to be a lot of info in here for you, especially if you are dealing with questions in relationships, whether dating, whether family members, whether your coworkers, friends, just people who you think they're just at odds with you, but really they need to see the hope that Jesus Christ can bring. So thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I've walked among the shadows. You wipe my tears away. And I've felt the pain of heartbreak. And I've seen the brighter days. And I break bread to heaven from my lowest place. And I have held the blessings God, you give and take away. No matter what I have, your grace is enough. No matter where I am, I'm standing in your love. On the mountains, I will bow my life to the one who set me there. In the valley, I will lift my eyes to the one who sees me there. When I'm standing on the mountain, I didn't get there on my own. When I'm walking down the valley, I know I am not alone. Your God.
Well, folks, as we finish out the show, I get to welcome back Dr. Greg Smalley here, who is going to answer a very fascinating question for us. Yeah, we'll get into it. But Greg, welcome.
Thank you. It's always good to be with you.
Good to have you. All right. Well, you are our expert on marriage and heading into marriage. And now you have been married 25 years.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
It's a big marker that we've passed.
That's pretty awesome.
So I got her to re-up for another 25. So.
Well, you know, there's no clause for no out.
Nope.
Oh,
it's 25 at a time.
That's hardcore. So. Okay. all right. Well, you're going to have to help this engaged person. She says, my fiance and I have been together for 5 years. I love him very much. But when we first got into the relationship, we had sex and were not really strong in our faith. We've grown in our walk and relationship with God and are getting more educated in such areas. Within the past 3 years, we've cut out having sex and also making out. It's a huge blessing that we don't do these things anymore. The only problem is that I feel I'm losing my attraction for him. I began to have a wandering eye and started looking at other men at church and on the street, which is totally not like me. Now that we're moving forward in our relationship, the physical attraction seems to be dwindling. I love him and am very much in love with him, but I just don't know what to do. Should I tell him or just deal with it and continue to pray for my attraction to become what it used to be?
Yeah, great question. I think it's important to remember that God has given us complete free will to choose who we're going to spend a lifetime with. And you know, next to your relationship with Christ, I mean, this is her biggest decision that she's going to make. And so, you know, to me, it's not surprising that she's kind of, quote unquote, looking around. I mean, we have a term in our culture, buyer's remorse. I mean, when you make a big decision, it psychologically, there's something about it that causes us to step back and just go, whoa, wait, was this right? We look around. I don't think that's such a big deal. What I would encourage her to do is, one, to refocus on the big things, the things that really matter, his relationship with the Lord. Is he a Christ follower? His work ethic, his sense of humor, you know, how does he handle your heart in challenges? How does he work through conflict? I think those are the big things that she needs to remind herself about who he really is, in addition to physical attraction. Here's what's interesting though about physical attraction, it's very multifaceted. So I think of the four parts of who we are, our emotions, our who we are physically, spiritually, mentally. Attraction is going to happen within each one of those four areas. Now, the problem is before marriage, we can't fully engage in all parts of those. So I love that they've quit having sex. What a great thing for their relationship. What it's doing is it's sowing health into the relationship. They're saying we're not willing to compromise. That's a huge benefit for their relationships. But understand that they're also pulling back on things that would have awakened or heightened kind of that physical attraction. When you're having sex with someone, God meant that for marriage because of the depth. I mean, that's the deepest level of intimacy, of attraction that we can experience. In like in Song of Solomon 8:4, we're being told to, you know, don't awaken love before it's the right time. In other words, there's certain depths of intimacy that we shouldn't be experiencing before marriage. Sex is an obvious one. Another one, though, I even realized this. My son-in-law now, who came to me to ask for my daughter's hand in marriage, as I was talking to him, asking him questions, one was just, where are they at spiritually? And he said, you know, we don't have that deep of a spiritual relationship. And I remember thinking, whoa, wait, what? That like felt like a huge red flag until he explained that for him was the deepest level of intimacy, and he didn't want to awaken that part until they were married. And I love that. So as she thinks about physical attraction, that's going to happen when they're emotionally connecting, they're physically, is she attracted to him connecting, you know, mentally. I mean, all those things, there needs to be a balance. And so I would tell her, don't worry so much about that, because you've pulled back on certain things that really exacerbated that attraction. And now she's being able to cultivate some other parts, and that's great. I would just continue to cultivate those different parts of their intimacy, emotionally, physically, spiritually, you know, and mentally, again, in appropriate ways where they're at. I don't think she needs to have a big talk with him. I think that she just needs to recalibrate and look for these other areas as she's deepening their relationship. And I don't think that's a huge deal. Now, if she's really telling me that she's, you know, I'm not attracted to him at all. Yeah. I mean, I think that would be a big deal. But she was attracted based on things that they were doing, which shows me that the attraction's there. She's just learning how to develop that in other appropriate areas.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, I mean, should she be thinking in her head, like, what conversation should they have about? I mean, they've been together for 5 years. I mean, does she still need more questions answered before marriage? Or is she unnecessarily stalling it out? Or
I don't know. I mean, this is now when they have an opportunity to really start to prepare for how are we going to manage change as we get married? How are we working through conflict? What will we do to keep investing in our relationship, date nights, and those kinds of things? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's important they keep deepening their skills within those key areas and go through premarital. We have a great program called Ready to Wed. I mean, this is the time now that they do that. No, I think an appropriate engagement is about 9 months, 6 to 9 months. Now they're in that. Mm-hmm. I think the more that they get into these things, I think for her, the attraction will continue to develop. I tell you know, speaking with my wife, we do marriage seminars. You know, when we're up there and we're ministering together in that deep, intimate way, man, I mean, there are a few times that she is more attractive to me than when we're in that deep place of ministering together. Mm-hmm. Again, things that they're going to be able to do as mm-hmm. they get married. So those feelings for her will I guarantee will come back and they'll be deeper based on what they're now able to do together.
That's great. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it for this week's show. Remember, this show was sponsored by the book Making Love Last by Laura Taggart. That book is available wherever books are sold. Also, make sure to get in those impact stories. Write to us at editor@boundless.org and give us that one memory or that takeaway that you've had from the show in the past 500 episodes. And you can also hop over around the site to catch what else we have going on this week at The Boundless Show. And that's it for this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.